Well, I certainly was wrong about that one.
It's showtime.
Well, howdy, this is The Horn. It is the 22nd day of November, 2021. I'm Robin, and we are off and rolling on this beginning of Thanksgiving week. It's also, of course, a tragic anniversary. It's the 22nd day of November, the day that the anniversary of the day that America, in oh so many ways, changed forever with the assassination of John Kennedy. And generation after generation of Americans has now grown up not believing the official story, Lee Harvey Oswald and his one lone magic bullet. And so, in many ways, and we could talk about this later if you want to, in many ways, we didn't land on the moon. The various and sundry forms of 9/11 truth, the viciousness of Sandy Hook and the Alex Joneses of the world, and now what happens with the pandemic and the viruses. In many ways, the Kennedy assassination is their parent, because we figured out early on that something wasn't right, that all the information wasn't coming out, that the Warren Commission report was by and large a giant, a giant god-awful stack of wasted toilet paper. And so we mark this day not just for the tragedy that it was in 1963, the year that I was born, but for the tragedy that has unfolded out of the mistrust in government that has happened since then. You know, the Kennedy assassination took place in 1963, followed by the presidential election of 1964 and the absolute thumping of right-wing conservatism in the form of a madman by the name of Barry Goldwater, who campaigned on his essential desire to drop nuclear weapons on anybody that, anybody that brought him a cold cup of coffee. What is it? Extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice, or something like that, whatever. And beginning in 1964, the Republican Party in the United States dedicated itself to the proposition of never again. And that is where the right-wing conservatism that we deal with today comes from. But I'm getting ahead of myself, because every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different, and I'm going to get caught up on some, if not all, of the gratitude. So thanks go out for this 22nd day of November 2021 to our PayPal subscribers and a la carte contributors. That means thanks to our dear friend Joey, and thank you to Colin, and thank you to Felicia, formerly of Nebraska, now of San Diego way. Thank you to Chris in Germany, saying welcome back. Thank you, Chris. Thank you to our dear sister Jude in the Great Northwest. Thank you to Harold, President and CEO of Sochtris, the secret open carry Happy Trails Roundup Society. Thank you to David in San Diego. Thanks as well to Andrea, and thank you to Cecilia. Thank you to Armand and Ralps and Vincent and Dr. John and our pal Reverbo, the human man. Thank you to Matt in San Francisco. Thank you to Aaron. And now we are back into this past Friday. Thank you all so very much for helping to keep this program on the air. It's going to be a wild struggle to get to the end of November and keep all the bills paid, so that when I send Annette home, and let's just be done with Agnes, shall we? That was her nickname. It means lamb. And the need to, and all of that was born of a desire on my part to protect my family from the potential hateful violence of the right-wing Republicans and the like, in the area where I live, where we live. But everybody's grown now, and she and I were talking about it, and she said, we don't need to do that anymore. And so I agree. And so, you know, and I mentioned this because our dear friend Lauren was confused by a post that I put up on Facebook over the weekend talking about my sense of Thanksgiving. And I mentioned the fantastic care that Annette has given me while I've been in convalescence and recovery. And Lauren asked, who's Annette and what happened to Agnes? And, well, they're the same people.
Agnes and Annette are the same person, but I'm Sister Agnes, and I always will be to the horn. So you can still call me that, but I'm Annette.
And I love you dearly.
I love you too.
So that's what that is. I'm still convalescing, and I don't know how long this program's going to go, because the near 2.5 hours that I did Friday night, I was a long time. I was the rest of Friday night and part of Saturday recovering from, because I just cannot sit in one place for that long very comfortably at all. But anyway, thank you. Thank you to all of our subscribers, Patreon, PayPal, a la carte, Venmo, however it is that you reach out to the program. I cannot thank you to help keep the program going. I cannot thank you enough. And of course, if you'd like, while the program is live, and you know, eventually when I am feeling better, I really do want to start doing some video. But I got to tell you, this little apartment where we are, it's lovely. It's wonderful. But it is not at all well lighted. In fact, it's rather dark, and it can get kind of depressing.
I love the dark.
I know, and the dark is afraid of you, dear. You're not afraid of the dark. The dark is afraid of you, and for good reason.
No, but I look great in low light.
Well, you know, I'm a dark beauty. When it's dark, I'm a beauty. I mean, I get it.
We will do video as soon as you're feeling better.
Right, because, you know, sitting here in a bathrobe and a nightie is just not exactly, you know.
Well, what? Do you think that you're going to dress up in your Thanksgiving frock and what?
Yeah, oh, and speaking of which, program note, I don't see any reason why there will not be a program here on Thursday evening, Thanksgiving evening, if anybody wants to gather around the internet speakers or whatever. In a desperate attempt to avoid 3 hours of conversation with, you know, family you might not necessarily get along with. I'll be here for some portion thereof. Yeah, right. I mean, this is us getting together on, because it's, you know, the reality is, Annette eats like a bird who is not even remotely hungry.
I live on air.
Yeah, she does. She lives on air and beauty and love.
And I sparkle when I go out into the sun. So.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
So us putting together a Thanksgiving dinner is kind of no, probably not. No, I won't. I mean, there's...
Are you telling me my cooking's that bad?
No, it's just that we're not going to get a turkey. We're not going to make cornbread. We're not going to make bread. We're not going to do dressing. We're not going to do... No. We're not going to do a... No, we're not going to do a Thanksgiving dinner. Maybe I'll order one out if you'll let me drive and pick it up.
I'll drive and pick it up.
Yeah, you will. You'll drive.
Oh, really? Who brought the car back, Robin?
Right, I know. And then couldn't drive for the rest of the week. But I get that. It's okay. You don't like to drive in traffic. You don't like to drive in Beckley. You don't like to drive in Oak Hill. You don't like to drive in Fayetteville. You don't like to drive in Birmingham.
But I feel so free now.
I know you do.
Change.
Yes.
I'll do fine.
But anyway, if you'd like to augment your listening experience, feel free right now, this very instant, to bebop over to headon.live, click on chat room, pop into the wacky, zany, real-time, multimedia, madcap extravaganza that is the chat room. And if you do, you'll be greeted by early arrivers Anatole and Roger and Oregon and Squeaky, and capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although he is a third-stage guild navigator, has decided not to fold space and remains Sparky. And he is, of course, capably assisted by pinch hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all around great guy, and probably still celebrating world champion Atlanta Braves fan, Brother Bishop Steve from Georgistan. Come on by. Come on by. As far as fundraising is concerned, where we stand right now is Steve! Where we stand right now is about a little under $1,000 to come even, or you know, with where we need to be fundraising wise, and those are big. That's a big number, but it's also a big need because, like I said, I'm maintaining a household down here and maintaining one in West Virginia, and I got a crap ton of bills that are due up there to keep things from going absolutely sideways. So if we can knock that out, that would be lovely. Now, what I said at the beginning of the program, I certainly made a mistake. And one of the funny things about being me is, A, I'm not afraid of making mistakes. B, I am not ashamed to admit when I have made a mistake. Because I am a human being. And the very essence of the definition of humanity is that we learn by screwing up. That's almost the entirety of the definition of human evolution. And what I mean by all this is that when I saw the news yesterday, and I dare say a lot of us had the same impression, but when I saw the news yesterday that someone in an automobile had plowed through the Christmas parade in Waukesha, Wisconsin, it was almost impossible for my conditioned brain not to think that some overeager aficionado of Kyle Rittenhouse and the maggot and maggots in general had decided to channel their inner self-defense and plow into a group of parade marchers. It was a sickening thought, but it felt also like very much a rational conclusion. One should, I suppose, not draw conclusions until all the evidence is in, but I was wrong. Turns out that the guy who killed five people, murdered, allegedly, five people, was an asshole. He was not a domestic terrorist. He was just an asshole. He was just an asshole who was sort of divorced from news or knowledge of the events going on around town. And didn't realize that the Waukesha Christmas parade was taking place, and had managed to get himself into a, what is this fucking dune, had managed to get himself into a goddamn knife fight. And then when the cops were called, he jumped in his car and fled right into a goddamn parade. What a dick. What an asshole. What a jerk. And I don't care if for the other 364 days of the past year, dude had been giving out clothing to the naked, homes to the homeless, and food to the hungry. In that moment, he defined himself forever as a great, big, stinking, giant asshole of a human being. And not a maggot, apparently. No, just a guy who had been in and out of trouble with the law, had a rap sheet for violent behavior. Five dead, 40 injured. Otto DeShatt points out, work of an asshole. Yeah, sometimes a cigar is only a cigar, and sometimes an asshole is only an asshole. But I jumped out there. I jumped the gun, and I tweeted, Kyle Rittenhouse, is that you, you wacky homicidal maniac, you? Because it sure seemed like a Kyle Rittenhouse kind of thing to do, didn't it? And no one, and that's the thing. It's a cognitive bias. It's a confirmation bias thing. Nobody within the sound of my voice would have been surprised if they had turned out to be some guy in a fucking MAGA cap who was pissed off about the critical race theory and the critical race theory and the Christmas parade there in Waukesha, Wisconsin, and the transgender marching band. None of that was true, but it would not have surprised any of us to find out that that was what had happened. But it did. It isn't what happened. It was, again, for lack of a better term, just an asshole. And we were tragically reminded the damage that plain old garden variety, violent, knife-fighting assholes can do. As the saying goes, we regret the error. Yeah. Ugh. On the other hand, speaking of running cars into people, it's almost like there was a disturbance in the maggot force, and we just had the wrong place in the wrong time. Because it turns out that Saturday evening in Manchester, New Hampshire, there were a group of, 15 or 20 protesters, and they were blocking part of a road. They had signs, and they were chanting about in protest of the fact that young Herr Rittenhouse had gotten away with murder. And that was when a black car with Massachusetts plates bore down on the protesters in New Hampshire. And he plowed into the group. He hit about six people with his car. Four of them were injured. One man's foot was run over. A 60-year-old woman was hit by the person in the car head on. And he had a passenger in the car, and the passenger was screaming bloody murder, because you see, the people who were protesting were part of a group called Black Lives Matter 860. Ibalisa Correa, who's a member of Black Lives Matter 860, said he was angry. It looked like he was looking for a reason, and he found one. You could tell in his face. The passenger was screaming bloody murder. The cops won't offer anything in the way of a motive, or anything specific for that matter about the suspect, or why he did it. Ms. Correa said, "This is nothing more than another example of people deputizing themselves against others to police against their own politics and views." And Black Lives Matter 860 said, as an official statement, "Vigilante emboldened by the Rittenhouse verdict commits attempted vehicular homicide against jaywalking protesters who were armed and showed superhuman amounts of restraint." Meanwhile, the protesters were letting cars pass during the green lights, and during the stoppage, they would go back and forth and protest in the road. So, wrong city, but there they were. Yeah. And we will. It gives me no pleasure to say it, but we will have more of this. There's no doubt in my mind about it, because it's all related to that statement that Hunter Thompson made now so long ago: the hogs are in the tunnel, and they will travel on a road of bones. So all of that by way of saying, I was wrong. I remain right, but I was wrong about the specifics of this particular incident. But not so wrong where Manchester, New Hampshire is concerned. Right. Meanwhile, speaking of being wrong, there's always Trader Tot. You know, Manchester, Connecticut, not New Hampshire. My bad. Thank you, Flavio. Manchester, Connecticut. I appreciate the, there I go being wrong again. But I appreciate the correction. But speaking of being wrong, and furthering the debate on, you know, if a Trump speaks in the forest and there's no one to hear their idiotic blathering, are they still wrong? Well, there's Trader Tot. And Trader Tot jumped out there as soon as it became known that the person driving the car, the asshole in Waukesha, Wisconsin, was a man of color. Trader Tot jumped out and said that the way the story was reported, which I thought was rather anodyne and restrained, certainly less restrained than I was. But not according to Trader Tot. It was a real sort of strong hit on what's become our weaponized media, where it's not about truth, it's not about presenting both sides, it's about creating a narrative. It's totally one-sided, he blithered. You see how quickly they're going to defend the Wisconsin attacker last night. It's only a matter of minutes until he was an incredible athlete and something went wrong. They'll be coming up with every excuse for this piece of crap terrorist within about 5 minutes. Well, see, there's a problem here. There is no indication that dude was a terrorist. He was just an asshole. He's an asshole with a violence problem, an asshole with a problem with authority, an asshole who gets into knife fights and then tries to flee the knife fight. Ugh. 39 years old, Daniel Brooks. He's facing 5 counts of murder. And the police chief of Waukesha, the one Dan Thompson, said, nah, it wasn't an act of terrorism. Yeah, he's an asshole. But not according to, that's not enough, according to Trader Tot, who desperately wants to be able to use that word to describe Mr. Daryl Brooks. And by that word, I do not mean asshole. Ugh. Yeah, let's see if this will even play.
Damn, and I think it was a real sort of strong hit on what's become, you know, our weaponized media, where it's not about truth, it's not about presenting both sides, it's about creating a narrative. It's totally one-sided. You know, you see how quickly they're going to defend the Wisconsin attacker last night. You know, it's only a matter of minutes till he was a incredible athlete, that something went wrong, and you know they'll be coming up with every excuse for this piece of crap terrorist within about 5 minutes. You know, this is the fix. I mean, this is a bad dude. He was let out on $1,000.
Yeah, that's right. We have a very similar prosecutor, Don.
Yeah. Okay. Whatever. You know, and this was on 1210 WPHT, Philadelphia. He's doing little AM talk radio stations now. God, they're so pathetic. But that little Trader Tot was, I think we should get a rope and just take care of this the way they're done used to. What's that? Oh, no, I don't have Professor Spicoli with me, but yeah. We'll sort through it. He's a dick. Trader Tot is a dick. It's just lots and lots and lots and lots of, you know, dicks. Assholes. There seems to be a surfeit of them. Oh, let's check in on let's check in with a few emails here, shall we? Let's see here. Thought experiment. This from Matt in San Francisco. I've been wondering something regarding the Rittenhouse thing. What would have been the reaction and outcome if the guy got his who got his bicep blown off would have pulled the trigger of his gun and killed Kyle? Wouldn't his defense be the same as Kyle claimed? Would the right wing have heaped praise on him for neutralizing an active shooter? Yes, I mean, having been attacked, he would have been perfectly within his rights to turn around and splatter little Kyle all over the pavement. And he would have had access to the very same defense that Kyle Rittenhouse put up. And if he had walked, the right wing would have been shrieking bloody murder, miscarriage of justice. And this kind of goes to show just how much our emotions play into our responses to any given set of circumstances. But you're absolutely right. And of course, the corollary to that, Matt, is that had Kyle Rittenhouse had skin darker than a grocery store paper bag, the Kenosha, Wisconsin police would have splattered him all over the pavement, and there would have been no self-defense. There would have instead been an investigation of the Kenosha police. The grand jury would have declared it an entirely appropriate use of force, and we would have gone on from there. Because, in point of fact, Kyle Rittenhouse was an active shooter. The minute he squeezed off the first round, he became an active shooter, and he kind of invited the police to splatter him all over that particular portion of Kenosha, Wisconsin. But the police saw a sweet little white child there, so as Gandalf says in the Lord of the Rings, pity stayed their hands. Yeah. Right. Sure. Oh, and thank you, George. George just got us started on fundraising, so we will say that we are $975 away from being caught up. Thank you, George. Thank you tremendously. And by the way, the other thing that's been going on today, and Steve in New York reminds me, subject line, Ahmed Arbery. From my dad down in Cherokee County, Georgia. Assholes with guns are outside the courtroom where the trial is pending on the guys who killed Ahmed Arbery. It is scary what gun toters may now think are their rights and what they think that they are able to do. It was just a few days ago, of course, that the pettifogger for one of these alleged murderers complained bitterly in open court that there was a lynch mob outside the Black Lives Matter woke left protesters. That was a dog whistle for all the delicate and dainty little terrified snowflakes to get their shooting guns and come on out and you know, surround the courthouse. Right. Well, thank you, Shorty. Shorty in L.A. So, oh, my God, Robin, yay to the welcome back. And holy, you're really live. Hola. I mean these words from my whole being, Robin. Number one, please know your Horn family would not be upset if you were not live right now. Just saying. Two, I'm relieved that you're both safe. And three, full disclosure, I'm doing my happy dance. Shorty, I'm tickled pink to be back. I've missed every day that I was not behind the microphone, and I felt like I was, those 5 days laid up in the hospital were just they were long. They were long, and they were difficult, and just sort of one day bled into another, and, you know, it blew my mind yesterday when I realized that I had been a full week home from the hospital. Tomorrow will be 2 weeks post-op, 2 weeks in my own authenticity, 2 weeks of having the the constant hum of gender dysphoria significantly reduced in my being. And it's grand, but the healing goes on, and 2 weeks is far from healed. I'm thinking maybe, now let's see, I go back to the doctor on December the 15th, and I'm hoping by then all the swelling's down and I've got a better idea of what things are going to look like and what they're going to feel like, because I'm sitting on a donut cushion right now, and even that is not particularly comfortable. Like I said, Friday, I've got my little lavalier mic and get an idea of what that thing sounds like. And the lavalier part of it's a pain in the ass because it keeps rubbing against my clothing. You hear it? You hear the rattling around? There's got to be a better way to do this. Yeah, maybe that's it. See what that sounds like, because if I can make that work, then maybe I can sashay over to the chaise longue. No, it's the couch. And just relax a little bit that way. So shoot me a note if this, and let me know if this sounds entirely horrible and terrible and awful and really bad. But it would be, it might make things a little bit easier if I can recline a little bit while we're doing this. And a reminder coming from Ron in Raleigh, Merrick Garland. At the end of Friday's program, I sent you an email about Merrick Garland's apparent foot dragging. No one ever mentions about why Barack Obama chose Merrick Garland for his SCOTUS pick. Barack asked, of all people, Orrin Hatch, who would be acceptable to the... You remember Orrin Hatch, don't you? Yeah. Who would be acceptable to the Republicans to replace fat, dead Tony? And Orrin said, Merrick Garland. Merrick Garland is a member in good standing of the Federalist Society, so if that doesn't clear up his resistance to bringing forth indictments against Trump cronies and other right-wing swine, nothing will. Yeah, I'm not impressed. And I'm so old I can remember that when the nomination was announced, I went over some of his background and went, you know, this guy is not any sort of significant addition to the so-called left wing of the court. But yeah, that does clear up a lot. Okay, thanks for the tech help. Jeremy says the new mic works well. It's louder. It sounds clear. Just a slight echo from the room. Just don't move an inch, right? Or if it rubs across anything, you get that sort of sawing sound. But it does seem to handle power rather well, because I don't have to pot this thing up nearly as much as I do the other microphone. Now there's an interesting effect. Both mics on at the same time. I'm sorry, I'm a little bit of a gear slut. It's kind of fun. Let's see if this is too detailed to go into or not. Yeah, Laboratories of Democracy Department, Flavio in Wisconsin says, you are aware that right-wing legislatures across the country are crafting legislation to legalize vehicular homicide when it comes to left-wing protests. Oh, yes, I'm very much aware. Oklahoma was a leader in that effort. And, yeah, plow down the critical race theory, transgender, Black Lives Matter, Antifa activists, bills are they're another one of those toxic fields of poisonous toadstools popping up through the legislative ground like mushroom, you know, like toadstools after a spring rain. This country. And in point of fact, Tara Devlin and I on TerraBuster Saturday evening had a lovely conversation on that very topic, the question of where this country is headed. And what I said is that, you know, a Republican legislative majority in the Congress is somewhat limited in what they can accomplish relative to the Constitution, but it's a lot more effective if you think about it this way. It's a lot more effective if you consider what having a whole bunch of Confederate legislatures acting at the same time might accomplish. Among other things, every unconstitutional act from every maggot legislature has to be countered in the courts. The courts are packed. The Supreme Court is packed. And so it's actually, I think, easier for them to accomplish their vile goals by doing it in the so-called laboratories of democracy that Flavio alluded to. And when you fling everything at the wall, you're bound to miss one or two, and some of them are going to stick. So there's that. Thank you, Henry. Thank you, Henry, so very kindly. Henry just jumped in, and so now we are down to 925. And 925 is a lot better than $1,000. So thank you, Henry, for getting us down there. And, you know, if we could come up with, another 225, we'd actually have fundraising for this evening covered, and we'd just still be dealing with the overage from my absence. Thank you, Henry. Thank you so much. Thanks for helping keep this all on the air. Yeah, Manchester, Connecticut. Right. I think I've been burned by that before, the fact that there's a Manchester in Connecticut and a Manchester in New Hampshire. Oh, and just a little tech note that Jeremy brings along. Loud and clear on my Bose Wave radio via a new skill I learned asking Alexa to play the head-on radio network on TuneIn. That's a thing you can do. Had a question about that last week from a dear friend, Aaron. And I didn't realize you could do that. But if you've got Alexa, you can tell Alexa to play head-on radio network on TuneIn. And Alexa will, in fact, do that for you. Thanks for the reminder, Jeremy. I appreciate it. One of the other technical things I'm going to do, and it should be arriving tomorrow, probably too late for the program, but I ordered an extra long adapter cord, eighth inch, so that I can plug my little in-ear monitors into it and plug it into the Rodecaster here. And so I can take my little wireless mic and have my cans with me too. And if Agnes is so willing, she can sit here, and if anybody wants to call in, I can still be reclining and whatnot. So that's a bonus. And it is Morin Monday, of course. And you might remember somebody we talked about a few weeks ago. He's becoming quite the hate-mongering superstar in the Republican Party. That's how, of course, you become a superstar in the Republican Party. You say a lot of hateful shit, and people who are every bit as hateful as you are send in money to promulgate, to fertilize the fields of your hate. I'm talking about Mark Robinson, the highest-ranking Republican elected official in North Carolina. And he is an ultra right wing Christian nationalist. You might recall that I said several weeks ago that I could not tell the difference between him and Dave Chappelle, because they both despise trans people with an equal and equally ignorant verve and fervor. Well, Dave Chappelle took it on the lam to go and run his gig in Europe. I don't know how well he translates in Europe, but never mind. Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson is back to attacking the LGBTQ community because, of course, it's as the late great Bill Hicks put it, it's a good dollar. And so he's also a preacher, Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson is. And so he does a lot of his grift from the pulpit. And now he is comparing gay people. No, wait for it. He's comparing gay people to shit. Might want to get the hockey puck for this. Because this is ugly. This is a real screamer. Imagine, this is what catapulted.
But I can't stand to turn that TV on, and I don't want my grandkids watching that television. Because I don't want to have to explain to my grandkids why two men are kissing.
Yeah, you see, here's the funny thing about his grandkids. His grandkids are probably, unless they are abused, and they may very well be, being raised, if they're being raised by a pair of right-wing Taliban Christian parents, kids understand live and let live, generally speaking, a lot better than adults of Mark Robinson's age and hate quotient. Now he's got a history now of going after the trans community with all the hate that he can muster. But again, he wants to make sure that he ticks off all the boxes, because that's how you do get famous and you do get rich in the Republican Party these days. He don't want to have to explain why two men's are kissing on the TV. Well, maybe it's best not to show any footage of Donald Trump and Matt Gaetz.
And I don't care what anybody thinks of that. Get mad at me if you want to.
You know, I'm not mad at him. I'm not. I pity him. I'm sad for him. He gets one life. He gets one sad, solitary life. One opportunity to be what Kurt Vonnegut referred to as sitting up mud. Each and every one of us on this planet, a chance to sit up and be sentient and look and wonder at the world, feel the sun on our faces, the wind at our backs. And he's throwing his life away on hate, just trashing it on hate, on bigotry. So no, I don't hate Mark Robinson. I pity him. I grieve for him. Because he, from the moment he was born until the moment he expires, will experience life on this planet as nothing more than a series of hatreds and anger and disgust and fear. And I mentioned Dune earlier in connection to knife fighting. Well, it is from Dune that we get the great saying that fear is the mind killer. And it's pretty clear that Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson of North Carolina is consumed by fear. And who knows on what level it might be. Maybe he fears people loving each other differently than how some ancient book put together by people who didn't understand why it rains think love should be manifested. Maybe he fears that so much because down deep inside, he would like to experience that love. There are so many, and of course, you know, too many to recount in any one moment. There are so many cases of right-wingers who have invaded, and Republicans and maggots and the like, who have invaded bitterly against the gay community, the LGBTQ community. And then they get caught with a man in their mouth. Or they get busted tapping their toes with their wide stance in the basement men's room of the Minneapolis International Airport. I mean, there are so many different interpreters. Or maybe it's like Ted Haggard who shrieked bitterly against gay people until he got caught, you know, snorting meth off a gay hooker's butt. Yeah. So, you know, who knows what it is that fires the hatred in the heart of Mark Robinson, this poor, pitiful soul. this weak, sad little thing that he is.
Ain't no child got no business seeing no two men kiss. If they did, God would have made it that way. He did.
Okay. Well, I mean, let's ask a question here. Do a child have any business seeing a man and a woman playing tonsil hockey? I mean, is that okay? If they're each trying to leap down the throat of the other, I mean, do you want little Mark Robinson the turd to see that on the TV there, preacher, lieutenant, governor, man? I mean, do you?
Oh!
Oh, clap. Clap, 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 clap.
Everything that God made serves a purpose. I don't care how ugly it is.
Okay, let's talk about that. Everything God made serves a purpose. I don't care how ugly it is. Okay, you're a genius. Shall we talk about the appendix? Let's talk about the purpose of the appendix. Now, I, without relying on any sort of biblical tomfoolery, can give you an idea, and many of you already know, of why the appendix exists. It's the same thing. It's really in the same vein as why the coccyx exists. I said coccyx, goddammit, now quit it. And to a certain extent, it's the same thing as why the wisdom teeth exist. And it has to do with something, of course, that Mark Robinson bitterly does not believe in, and that is human evolution. The appendix... Everything God made has a purpose, right? Right. The Anopheles mosquito that spreads malaria and yellow fever has a purpose. Well, in colonial America, the purpose of the Anopheles mosquito was to kill off white people who had no exposure or ability to deal with that pathogen. And so early white European colonists were routinely wiped out by, and up into the 20th century, by outbreaks of malaria, and in particular yellow fever. There was a yellow fever outbreak in Philadelphia at the time of the ratification of the Constitution. Washington, D.C. bugs out in the early days of our national capital. You bugged out of Washington, D.C. in late July and through most of August because that was yellow fever season down there in the swamp that George Washington sold the federal government. Hey, Martha, just sold him a swamp. Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's great. We were trying to unload that forever. I sold him a swamp, Martha. Well, that's very good, George. Nice to see you're making your own money for a change instead of spending mine. Hey, George, you want to have sex? No, no, Martha, that's not my thing. Marquis de Lafayette's coming by later. Never mind, let's not go there. The place where I was born, part of the reason for building the Tennessee Valley Authority was because the people living in places along the Tennessee River, like in northwest Alabama, ate a steady diet of dirt. About not kidding, but they also had horrible yellow fever outbreaks all the way up into the 20th century because of that Anopheles mosquito, which has a purpose, according to Mark Robinson, the lieutenant governor and highest-ranking Republican official of the state of North Carolina. My God, this man is stupid. I mean, I know. If you watch people like Bill Maher, he will lecture you on how Democrats can't be running around saying how Republicans is all the time stupid. So I guess that just means that we're supposed to ignore the stupid of the Republicans and pretend that they're actually saying, oh, I don't know, intelligent things when they say things like everything God made has a purpose. Not so much. Tsetse fly, Reverend Lieutenant Governor Robinson, tsetse fly? Elephantiasis has a fucking purpose, does it? But no, back to the appendix for a minute. The only purpose an appendix has in modern humanity is to just sit there and do nothing, or to become infected and inflamed, possibly burst, and kill people. Appendicitis. But it wasn't always that way. Once upon a time, back before fire, or back before we learned to control fire, and we're talking about a long time ago now, human beings did not have the ability to cook meat. And so we just kind of sat around gnawing on the little leavings that that we fought with the buzzards over, that the jackals left behind, and the wolves and the foxes and whatnot. And we needed that extra little bit of large intestine to complete the digestive process. Oh, but then some clever little primate, some humanoid, some hominin, burned his little fingers and realized that fire could be portable once you figured out how to make it. And barbecuing was born. And with the rise of cooked food, whether it be cooked meat or cooked roots or whatever, several things happened over the course of the evolutionary era. Among other things, human beings became less prognathic. That is to say that, you know, that round sort of extension of Homer Simpson's mouth, that's called prognathism. And so our chins receded. And when our chins receded, it meant that we needed less muscle structure for chewing, which meant that our brows receded, which meant that our skulls became thinner and created more space for more brains. Now, this obviously does not all apply universally because, well, we have Mark Robinson and Mo Brooks, Les Brames, and people like that, and Donald Trump, and Trader Tot, and Eric the Dumber, and Matt Gaetz, and, well, yeah, but anyway. And that's all related to fire and cooking food. Same thing goes for same thing goes for the wisdom teeth. Wisdom teeth have nothing to do with wisdom, and everything to do with the fact that we used to need those four extra molars for grinding up all that raw stuff. But we don't need it anymore because we evolved. Hell, somewhere down the road, we may lose four more molars. You know, when we get to the point where we're all just living on sort of liquidy kind of, I don't know, insure sort of beverages and, yeah, never mind. Everything God made had a purpose. Okay, you know, you can kind of give that to him if you are willing to grant human evolution, but, you know, this is one of those assholes who thinks that the planet is at best 7,000 years old. But wait a minute, because this isn't about human evolution. He's trying to figure out a way to say something rotten about the gay community. And he's going to get there. Here we go.
Everything that God made serves a purpose. I don't care how ugly it is. Let's get a little ugly. I want you to think about what the cows leave behind.
Now, amen, brother. That has a purpose. Because them funny little mushrooms grow under what the cows leave behind, and if you dust them off and clean them up a little bit and you munch on them, next thing you know, you see in God. Yes, as Bill Hicks, the late great prophet, peace be upon him, once said, it squeegees your third eye squeaky clean. So cow poo does have a purpose. But that's not what Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson is thinking about, because he's never had an enlightened moment in his life. Like I said, he was born in hate, and he will die in bigotry. And there ain't nothing in between but hate and bigotry. There's no beauty, there's no love, there's no anything. There's just blind ambition, hate, and bigotry, and trying to figure out a way to finagle more people into giving him power.
It don't get no uglier than that.
How about that? It don't get no uglier than cow poo. You ever been around a pigsty? Cow poo can be kind of ugly. Pig shit is a lot worse. Horse shit is kind of grassy. But they all serve a purpose, they do, within the bioevolutionary scheme of things. them pretty little butter-colored butterflies and little yellow ones that just flutter all around the shit piles. Well, they're there for a reason, yeah. But he chose a bad example. It don't get no uglier than that. You know what's ugly? Ugly is five dead people in Waukesha, Wisconsin. That's uglier than cow shit. At a Christmas parade, five dead people. Because a dude couldn't stay, an asshole couldn't stay out of a knife fight. Ugly is a mama who lets her teenage boy go to a protest with a semi-automatic rifle where he blows away two people and maims a third. That's pretty fucking ugly. It's a lot uglier than any cow shit I've ever seen. Ugly is putting children in cages. Ugly is tearing babes in arms away from their mamas and separating them and putting them in different cages. Ugly is declaring an entire segment of the human population to be suspect simply because of the way they practice a religion or the particular religion that they practice. That's ugly. That's about as ugly as humanity is capable of. All a cow's doing is shitting from its three stomachs. That's all that is. Ugly, ugly. But if you want ugly, and this compare does not begin to compare with cow shit, ugly is what's about to come out of Mark Robinson's mouth.
But you think about what to be done with what the cow leaves behind. Why is the grass in that cow pasture so green? Why is it so lush? Could it be that ugly stuff the cow left behind? See, God created that. He made that for a purpose. Everything that God made, from the foul odor of what the cow left behind, to the decaying body of every living creature, to the maggots that eat those dead bodies, to the flies that fly around what the cow left. God made all those things for a purpose. Will somebody please explain to me the purpose of homosexuality? Let's get down to brass tacks. What is the purpose of homosexuality?
Well, the purpose of homosexuality, Pastor, Brother, Lieutenant Governor Mark, is love. Because love is love. That's all. That's all. It's just a means by which people can love their way through this place that you contribute to making a veil of tears. And how ugly, how utterly ugly it is for this fool, this vicious freak, this sad and pathetic, poor excuse for a member of the human race. To think and speak as he does. But more importantly, what a Mark Robinson is doing here, what he's doing is he is trying to draw a line between the LGBTQ community and humanity. He is trying to suggest that somehow gay people, lesbians, bisexual, transgender people, queer questioning, intersexed, asexual people are beyond the pale of creation. And see, what it is if they are beyond the pale of creation, and we learned this some 85 years ago, if people are deemed to be outside humanity or less than human, well, you can just kill them. You can just kill them. And when I heard this clip earlier today, I knew I would wind up talking about it this evening because, you see, Saturday was the Trans Day of Remembrance. Saturday was the day when, every year, we take note of the trans people who, for nothing more than trying to live their lives, trying to exist in their own authenticity, trying to have some peace in their being and be truthful with themselves and the world, lose their lives. No, have their lives stolen from them. And you see, last year there were 23 names just on the United States list of the Trans Day of Remembrance. 23 names. 23 lives lost, stolen. This year it was up to 46. If it works exponentially, next year it will be 92. And I would not be surprised if next year it is 92, because people like Mark Robinson are trying to start a war. With what we know now coming out of the Kyle Rittenhouse trial, if some violent, benighted, murderous Trump voter, Republican, walks up to a pride parade and opens up with an AR-15. There is an entire cult that used to be known as a political party called the Republicans who will rally around that individual and say that that individual was defending himself against the curse of gayness, lesbianism, transgender people. And they will bark and they will hoot and they will howl and they will scream hallelujah when a jury comes back and says, yep, it's okay to mow down people like that because people like that aren't really human, just like Mark Robinson says. A few emails. Explain kissing. Matt in San Francisco says it's not that hard. They're kidding because they love each other, Timmy. Now, go clean up your Legos. You're welcome, Mark. It's not that hard. They're kissing because they love each other, Timmy. And don't just throw your dirty clothes under the bed. Put them in the hamper. Get with it. Perfect, Matt. Perfect. Thank you to our dear friend, Texas T. We are now down to 905, $905 to catch up with fundraising. Thank you. And that means we're only 205 away from funding the program. Thank you, Texas T. Thank you so much. Let's see. Crazy dude calling us shit. Steve in New York says, I'm with you. I have no anger for him. None. I reserve my anger for shit that I want to change. For him, I just don't care. I have indifference toward him. I wouldn't care if he dropped dead tomorrow. I would care about his kids and grandkids, etc. Oh, I care about them right now. Because, you see, hate is transmitted transgenerationally. And I'm sure they are already being taught to hate even as we speak. As to the coccyx, stop it. Steve in New York says, yeah, well, what about the cock 7? How about that, Robin? Cock 8, cock 9. Ooh, I don't want anything to do with those cock 9s. Rhymes with Glock 9, and I don't want any of them either. Ooh, that was a witty one. As to the appendix, Lee in New York says, Edith Bunker said the appendix is for surgeons to practice on before harder operations. That's probably true, too. Ron in Raleigh would know because Ron, of course, is in Raleigh, which is in North Carolina, which is the state where Mark Robinson is the lieutenant governor and highest-ranking Republican official. And he said, this bigoted blowhard will be running for governor of North Carolina in 2024. I've said that this country is irredeemably fucked. If this man becomes governor of North Carolina, I will be proved correct. Mark Robinson also says that America was formed as a Christian nation. White evangelical Christians will vote for him because, as one of their dim-witted lot says, old Mark is a breath of fresh air on the political scene. Yikes. Yeah, yikes indeed. As to ugliness, Lee in New York says to me, ugly are the people who need a larger pile of money more than others need food. That's downright rabbinical of you, Lee. Well said. This preacher, Jeremy in Vermont, says, not that it's wrong in any way, but you just know. I mean, we just know. We don't have proof, but we all just know this freak anger masturbates to gay porn while in his own house, just praying his wife will see him and let the world know who he really is. It reminds me of the story of the associate minister from the First Baptist Church of Montgomery, Alabama. The little woman went to visit family and came home and found him smothered to death in two latex wetsuits and stuffed plumb full with a cock gag and a butt plug. Because Jesus. Yeah. Oh, cool. Thank you. I like nice round numbers. Jeremy's gotten us down to $200 to go on fundraising for this evening and down to $900 even to come up with the bill paying money. Thank you. Thank you, Jeremy. Where'd that go? Dang it. Sometimes I hate touch screens. There. Yeah. Randy Radar says, funny how the politicians and priests get a direct line to God and all we get is staticky radio. Right. Well, let's get back to Mark Robinson just for a little bit, and then we'll move on. But, I mean, this is more Ann Monday material of the First Order.
Does it create? Now, notice again, I didn't tell you don't have the right to be a homosexual. Let's get this straight, because I know Right Wing Watch is going to play this. Play this right part, too. Watch. In America, you have the right to be a homosexual. And as an elected official, I have a duty to protect your constitutional rights. And I will. But we're in church right now.
Yeah, and you know, we in church right now. And in church, we can talk about how much God hates you and we hate you, even though we got to protect your constitutional rights. God hates you. And so if some good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual decides to waste a bunch of y'all, well, you know, we can't protect your constitutional rights no more because you ain't got no constitutional rights when you did.
And we talking about church stuff. And we are talking about God stuff.
Now, this is pretty much Satan stuff. You know, because, you know, he's following a demiurge. He's following some sort of deity of viciousness and hatred. And it's really not supported by the message of Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and semi-literate itinerant rabbi who wore a dress every day of their lives.
And I'm asking you, what purpose, if homosexuality is of God, what purpose does it serve?
Well, shall we? Anybody want to jump in on this one? Because he says, you know, the only purpose is procreation. Now, I don't think there's any chance that we would ever have to accuse Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson of North Carolina of having been to the Vatican. He probably considers the Pope the Whore of Babylon, the Catholic Church, Whore of Babylon, all that crap. But millions upon millions of people have gazed in wonder at the Sistine ceiling and the outstretched hand of God reaching out to Adam. Well, that was the purpose that a gay man named Michelangelo Buonarroti served. Then there are the countless thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of lives saved by a gay man who invented vast elements of what we now know as computing. Alan Turing, fighting the Nazis during the Second World War. This is too. And, you know, what an anti-human insult it is to suggest that people are nothing more than their genitals. I wonder if Mark Robinson thinks that he's nothing more than his genitals. Because Lord knows Mark Robinson apparently spends a lot of time thinking about how gay people have sex. As we've remarked on more than one occasion here. Good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian, Republican spend a lot more time thinking about how gay people have sex than gay people think about how gay people have sex. It's one of the wonders of the world, really. In the West Virginia legislature, we've got a young man who recently came out. He's a member of the legislature, and he recently came out as gay. And he's a Republican. And he's going to stay a Republican. And I just wonder how that's going to work out. The next time they introduce some anti-trans bill, some anti-gay bill, how's that young gay man going to vote? Because, see, that's the problem that goes with all of this. If you want to stand with the servants of darkness like Mark Robinson, if you want to be in their party, you have to do their bidding. If you want their coin, you have to do their will. You have to render unto Caesar, as it were. Because, you know, that young gay man in the West Virginia legislature ain't going to get shit from the leadership if he runs around talking about how bigoted the things his party does are. But, well, he's out and proud and good for him. Wait a fucking moment, says Jeremy in Vermont. This fuckstick is an elected official? Yes, he is the highest ranking elected official in the state of North Carolina. He is the lieutenant governor of North Carolina. Talking church, doof. Mark Robinson, Jeremy. What about the separation of church and state, you moron? Hypocrisy much? Oh, wait, this is a Baptist preacher we're talking about. Precisely. And, you know, that, well, that's not applicable. I-O-K-I-Y-A-R, right? You can politic from the pulpit all day long. Because he's not saying, vote for me as such. He's just telling all the bigots that he's given them a reason to vote for him. And by the way, Ron and Raleigh, a question. Does your present governor, I can't remember his name, does your present governor, is he term limited out? Can he not run again? Or is he just dead in the water? And Ron has a query. Concerning Kyle Rittenhouse and the McMichaels, both of the parties said that they had to fire in self-defense because the men that they had killed were going to take their guns and kill them with their own guns. No one mentions that only two people died in Kenosha and Kyle Rittenhouse killed both of them. Could it be that they were scared of being shot by these gun-toting, trigger-happy gun humpers? Kyle had a strap on his weapon. How could it have been taken from him? Precisely. But none of those annoying little details really mattered. The fact that he took a gun to a place where he was not wanted, was not asked, and then claimed self-defense for a situation that he created. I mean, when you do that and a jury goes, nah, the facts are really not part of the salient portion of the inquiry. Purpose of homosexuality, Lee in New York asks, I'm just thinking, if homosexuality serves no purpose because they do not procreate, then what about Roman Catholic clergy? Oh, well, don't get an evangelical like Mark Robinson going on the Catholics. Because, well, whore of Babylon, mackerel snappers, Mary worshipers, idolaters. You just got to be around when they're talking and they think nobody can listen. Nobody can hear except, you know, the people that they're dog whistling to. Randy Radar saying, you know, God doesn't seem to throw down lightning bolts as much anymore. He seems to prefer hurricanes and tornadoes. Southern much? You ever seen a hurricane, Randy? They are chock-a-block full of lightning. And it can be really, really spectacular. I stood on the beach at Gulf Shores back in August and watched Ida. You know, we were on the far, far side of it. Didn't get much of it, but it was still scary. Stood on the beach and watched it moving toward land. And the lightning out there was spectacular. And I don't mean that in a good way. It was a spectacle. It ran straight, and it seemed like it wasn't going far from the sky to the ground, but just one after another, zap, 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 zap. Don't discount the lightning, Randy. Don't discount the lightning.
What does it make? What does it create? It creates nothing. Somebody asked me in a classroom one time, we were talking about, and they said, this fellow was a homosexual, looked at me and said, so you think your wife and you think your heterosexual relationship is superior to my husband and our homosexual relationship? Yes! Yeah. He said,
Lord Jesus, I want to be so catty. I just do. But I'm a better person than that. I'm not going to mention the fact that this guy has to be greased to get him through a doorway. I am not going to mention the fact that that Mrs. Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson probably has to go looking for that thing with a pair of tweezers and a magnifying glass. I am not going to do any of that. No, no. I'm not going to mention the fact that for all I know that. No, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that. You can't make me do that. I am not going to do that. That's awful and it's catty, and I'm trying to be a whole lot better person than that. But he thinks that going fappity, 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 flop, flop, flap, 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 that somehow is a superior form of. No, no, no. Just don't ask what goes on in the men's room there with Mark.
I'd like for you to explain that. And so I did. See, if I take a white guy and a black guy and stand them beside each other.
Now we're getting to the core of the issue. Somebody has some ebony and ivory fantasies.
Guess which one of them is superior? Neither one of them. Black guy can't fly. White guy can't fly. White guy can't see the future. Black guy can't see the future. Black guy bleeds red. White guy bleeds red. They the same. They were created the same. Ain't no superiority in color.
Now, see, that's for the white folks out there. That, hey, look, he's one of the good ones. And I know, I probably spent way too much time on this. But I don't just do things. And the fact of the matter is, this is important. Because, you know, we have established a track record over the last near two decades of being so far out in front of the curve, it looks like we're on straight road. Well, uncurvy road. Maybe not so straight. But this is 2022 calling, y'all. This is 2022 and 2024 laying down a marker. If you hate this now, you're going to hate what's coming even more. Because it's going to be all day, every day, no let up, no rest on Sundays, no holidays, nothing. It is going to be this kind of hatred. Because this is their stock in trade, and this is where their money is, and this is where they can motivate people. I just so happened to watch the final season episode of this past Friday's Real Time with Bill Maher. And I have a hard time watching that. Because it's just so, he's just so awful so much of the time. Because he loves to hippie punch. And he loves to kick down. And so there was Bill Maher fulminating and pontificating about how Democrats have got to stop talking about wokeness. When, if you were to do a simple search, you would find that the vast majority of the uses of the word woke are coming from the right wing. Because they heard a thing and they knew that they could motivate the delicate, snowflakey, arguably, if not overtly, then subconsciously racist elements of white middle America who are terrified for some reason, well, not for some reason, because they have been conditioned to be terrified by the Republican Party, that somehow their rights will be diminished if other people have the same kind of rights that they, as white Americans, enjoy. And so there was Bill Maher lecturing away at people. Well, it was just a giant straw man. And saying that Democrats have to stop talking about wokeness. Almost as if making an argument that Democrats have to stop talking about anything but the delicate, tender fifis of aggrieved white maggots. And they talked about how Joe Biden was elected by a bunch of Republicans. And God, I've heard this. I also heard it on my Filthy Morning Habit. Joe Biden was elected as a uniter, and then he introduced this wild-eyed, radical, progressive agenda. Where? What? Oh, please, for the love of God, show me this radical, wild-eyed, progressive agenda, because as a radical, wild-eyed, progressive, I would damn sure love to see it. I'd like to at least just pat it on its little dying furry head. People complaining that the $1.2 trillion pittance that we got it was somehow so big, so huge, so groundbreaking, so earth-shaking. When in fact it's not $1.2 trillion, it's $120 billion a year for 10 years. It's a drop in the damn budgetary bucket. Ugh. Sorry about the ugh. But when you hear it in as diverse a place as, say, Real Time with Bill Maher, and then you hear it again on my Filthy Morning Habit, and I'm sure you can probably hear it if you have the stomach to tune into Washington Journal. Well, you kind of know at that point that somebody is coordinating something. Don't you? I mean, isn't that kind of like evidence or something? It sure seems like. I don't know. So, I've managed to get a filler obster out, hour and 24 minutes or so. I'm sore. But if you'd like to engage in some conversation, you are certainly, you're certainly invited to do so. I'll try to carry on a little bit longer if anybody wants to. Brother Deacon Asa says, okay, I'm going to say it because you seem to not want to go there. What's Brother Mark Robinson's over-under on getting caught with a man in the mouth? My money is on 2024. I don't know. Well, it all depends on, you know, how smart he is and how able he is to overcome the compulsions of his hatred. I don't know. But anyway, if you want to reach out, you can get in on the stress line. And that, of course, is 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN. And then, of course, there's the Skype line, which is Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype. Someday I'll do something about that Bob Kincaid part. I got a lot of time on my hands. I need to make a list. The prosecutions and the sentencings and everything that attend the attack on January 6th against the Capitol, the seat of constitutional governance and constitutional governance itself. Adam Johnson has had a plea hearing in which he got his sweet little plea deal. Adam Johnson is the guy who was photographed schlepping through the Capitol carrying Nancy Pelosi's lectern. And he got a lecture from the trial judge taking his plea. Senior District Judge Reggie Walton is one of those who has evinced an unwillingness to sit idly by and watch. And, well, I mean, he's handed out some slaps on the wrist. But he seems competent or he seems cognizant of where the real blame lies in all of this. And Reggie Walton from the bench, talking about people who lost elections, and says, he did this in the course of lecturing Adam Johnson. He said, Al Gore had a better case to argue than Mr. Trump, but he was a man about what happened to him. He was a man about what happened to him. He accepted it and walked away. Some of us wish he had fought harder. I admit we do. What concerns me, and you know what, we can wish in one hand and shit in the other and see which one fills up first. But the bottom line is, it has nothing to do with that, with what Al Gore did or didn't do. It is what Sandra Day O'Connor did or didn't do. She knew what was going on. She knew the Supreme Court was being asked to install an unelected man in the presidency of the United States. But instead of honoring her constitutional oath, Sandra Day O'Connor, who, you know, historical first woman on the Supreme Court, Sandra Day O'Connor said, I'm going to put politics ahead of party, and I'm going to vote with my party over my government, my country, and my constitution. And she provided the fifth and deciding vote for putting George W. Bush in the Oval Office, a decision that led to the death of 1 million innocent Iraqi civilians, endless wars, one of which we only just now recently ended. But indeed, Judge Walton was right. Al Gore accepted it and walked away. Looking then back to Adam Johnson, he said, what concerns me, sir, is that you were gullible enough to come to Washington, D.C. from Florida based on a lie, and the person who inspired you to do what you do is still making those statements, and my concern is that you are gullible enough to do it again. Ooh, hi, Judge Walton. It's almost like you've been listening. Y'all, they're gonna do it again. Yeah. Poor Mr. Johnson, delicate maggot snowflake that he is. Well, He answered as such. He said, well, okay, I accept responsibility for getting caught up in the moment. And a hard couple of years have led me to spend a lot of time listening to a lot of information and reading things online. And that's how come I done it. I mean, for God's sakes. That picture of him with his Trump boggin on, waving at the camera while holding the lectern as if he was walking by in some sort of parade. Prosecutors described exactly what Adam Johnson did. They said he wandered around the Capitol until he came across Nancy Pelosi's office suite, where he jiggled the door handle. It was locked. Then he grabbed the lectern and carried it to the Capitol Rotunda, posed for pictures, and, well, he eventually put down the lectern. It was kind of cumbersome. And he hooked up with a bunch of other maggots who were trying to get into the House chamber. And Adam Johnson looked over at a bust of George Washington and said, that'd make a great battering ram. And on top of it all, during the plea hearing, among other things, he said, you know, I've been thinking I might write a book about all this. But, you know, if in the next 5 years, as part of my plea deal, the government can seize any money I make off my book. Now, bear in mind, Jesus Christ, this just makes my head hurt. Bear in mind that he was charged with 3 crimes originally, theft of government property, among others. And instead, he's been pled down to a little bit of nothing, and he's facing all of 6 hard months in jail. And he's going to pay $500, $500 in restitution for what he did while he was busily attacking the Constitution of the United States, the idea of constitutional governance, and the seat of that constitutional governance. Meanwhile, one of the guys who organized several of the buses to go to D.C. and attack constitutional governance, a guy named Frank Scavo, he's from Eastern Pennsylvania. He got a maximum fine of $5,000 today and was ordered to serve 60 whole days in jail. He was in senior U.S. District Judge Royce Lamberth's court. And when he got to 60 days in jail, it came as a complete surprise to Merrick Garland's prosecutors because they had asked the court to please just give him 14 days. Back in September, he pled guilty to illegally demonstrating at the Capitol. He was one of the logistics people who organized the small army that attacked the Capitol. And Merrick Garland's Justice Department wanted him to get all of 14 days behind bars. And Judge Lamberth said, now you get 60. Now, Frank Scavo, too, said, Your Honor, I got a deep sense of regret. It was a crime. Now, of course, he too posed in the Capitol. Judge Lamberth said, From the point the jig was up, you've done everything you could. Good luck to you. Really? The federal judge wished good luck to an insurrectionist who tried to overturn constitutional governance in the United States. Oh, my Jesus. Y'all, they're going to do it again. Now, this is a guy who bragged about storming the Capitol. And then he posted on Facebook, Pence is out of the Capitol, no certification today. And U.S. Assistant Attorney Seth Monero said, He had more or less a front row seat to the Capitol siege and then asked for him to get 14 days in jail. Does that make you just a little bit sick? Because it really does. It does me. This does not bode well. John Lolos was sentenced this past Friday by United States District Judge Amit Mehta. And Judge Mehta gave him 14 whole days in prison. But Judge Mehta made another statement along the way. Judge Mehta said the Capitol insurrectionists were called, this is a quote, were called to Washington, D.C. by an elected official, prompted to walk to the Capitol by an elected official, who then stood by for hours while they started rioting on his behalf. People like Mr. Lolos were told lies and falsehoods and told that an election was stolen when it clearly was not. This is a federal district judge. Regrettably, people like Mr. Lolos, for whatever reason, are impressionable and will believe such falsehoods and such lies, and they are the ones who are suffering the consequences. And then he said that Nitwit Nero and those behind the so-called Stop the Steal rally, quote, in no meaningful sense of the word, have been held to account. Turning to Mr. Mehta, Judge Mehta then said, you are a pawn in a game that's played and directed by people who should know better. Yeah. Well, as to Mr. Lolos, he got those 14 days even after he ran his own mouth. At his hearing, he said, he tried to justify what he did on January 6th. He said he was invited to the Capitol by the smallest police officer I've ever seen in my whole life. He said it was okay for him to walk into the Capitol because others were already doing it. I see a window, it's broken, people are going inside. Yeah, I went inside, Your Honor. That's when Lolo's attorney was like, ixnay on the unit day. Having tried to intervene, Zoe Tillman of BuzzFeed News says, Lolo says no, he doesn't want to talk to his lawyer. He takes responsibility because he chose to go into the Capitol, but he wants to continue to address the judge to put it in context. My God. Well, like I said, here we are, and what we have here is a little blueprint for what's coming, 2022 and forward. We got to screw our courage to the sticking place. that's cute. Don in West Tennessee says, big welcome back. Thank you, Don. I hate to say it, but for want of a better word, you're my filthy evening habit. You're a great voice in this so-called, in this so red portion of these double red parts. They, God help them, they just can't help themselves. I know. God bless them. Yeah. Thanks, Don. Thanks so much. And thank you, Christopher. Christopher, thank you so much. Gratitude and congratulations, says Christopher. Thank you. Thank you. We're down to 875. Thank you, Christopher. That's huge. Every little bit goes to bill paying and kind of staying alive down here. Thank you. Oh, answering my question about Roy Cooper, governor of North Carolina, Ron in Raleigh says, no, he's not term limited. However, the legislature's just stripped the governor and AG both. Both of them being Democrats, and they've stripped them of all their power. Mercy. So as I get stronger, the program will get longer. As I'm a little bit better able to sit up and manage hours in the chair. But we got a program in this evening, such as it is. Thank you. Thank you very much indeed. Wait a second, what's going on here? Thank you very much to Brother Deacon Asa, who hates round numbers. Really, Brother Deacon, really? So that's 875, 865, 862, $861.22 to go. 861.22. Can somebody do something about that? Those 22 censuses? Well, dadgummit, Otto, you got to stay connected if you want to get on the program, but okay. Thanks just the same. Okay. You going to try this again, Otto? So, 861.22. Ouch. Ciphering down from that's going to be a real booger. Hey, Otto, how you doing?
Pretty good. How are you, Bob? Oh, Robin.
Thank you. A little sore. Oh, who am I kidding? A lot sore, but I'll get better.
Oh, good. Well, I've been going through some medical issues myself.
Yeah, I saw some of that in the chat room. Are you okay?
I feel fine, but man, I tell you, a keto diet, if you do a real strict keto diet, it's not for the faint of heart. But I'm telling you, my mind functions a lot better because I'm not burning sugars. I'm burning natural oils or plant oil, fish, omega-3 oils, and I'm learning all about my endocrine system and how delicate we are and how important it is not to go become pre-diabetic. But if you look at the history of eating in America 100 years ago, people ate when they could. They didn't eat when food was available. But about 13 years ago, I became morbidly obese. And I had to go on an Atkins diet, but the Atkins diet was not enough for me. I lost some weight. And so about 4 months ago, my doctor said that I have a 30% chance of dying in the next 10 to 20 years. So I said, uh-oh. So I studied more about the keto diet and how to lose more weight. And I realized there's just a lot of stuff you have to eliminate out of your diet. So, but I'm feeling better, but I'm glad you're back on the air, and it's nice to hear your voice. I always enjoy the first hour.
Well, thank you very kindly, and I'm glad you're okay. I mean, I know a few people doing keto, and they say it really, from a diabetic standpoint, it really will pull the weight off of you. And
yeah,
it's kind of hard, but it's not easy to do, is it?
No, it's not, because you feel like crap. So the first 3 weeks, you feel like crap, first 2 weeks, basically. And it's because you're transitioning from eating sugars to going on a fuel soy, a source of fats, but natural fats. And I'm taking – and I learned about MCT oil, which is the medium-chain triglyceride. And the cool thing about the medium-chain triglyceride is that once you ingest that, there's no metabolism. It goes straight into your liver, and then it goes into your mind. And after 3 weeks, I've noticed I have really clarity of thought. It's really easy for me to think, and I can think in associative terms. But what I love about keto is not so much the weight loss, is that it kills cravings for doing bad things to your body, like smoke weed. I have no cravings for pot. I quit drinking in 1996. I haven't had a drink in 26 years. But when people quit drinking, they usually transition to eating sugars. And they eat a lot of sugars all day long, and then they get fat. And then that's basically what happened to me. I was basically an alcoholic. I didn't know it until a doctor said, Tim, you're an alcoholic. You got to quit drinking. So that was 26 years ago. So I just think when I was born, I was born as the runt of litter of our family, and I was born kind of like I got the the crappy body. I always had a very high metabolism as a kid. I was really skinny as a rail. And I was hypoglycemic. And if I had done keto back then, even though I didn't need to lose weight, I think my hypoglycemia would not have been an issue. I would have
but
been
also, there weren't a lot of people talking about keto back then either.
No, there wasn't. And everybody thought sugars was a natural, was the okay way of eating. You know, you always had cereal in the morning with milk. But that stuff is like the worst thing to eat in the morning. What you should have in the morning is two eggs. And what I do now, they talk about in keto, they talk about fasting, and they talk about the this concept of autophage, that if you fast up to 24 or even some people are doing 42 hours fasting, but what happens is in the autophage is the body heals itself, it works on itself, and it improves the body, it makes it more efficient, The autophage thing was recently discovered, I believe, past 5, 10 years, 20 years, that that fasting does help. My problem right now is I can't fast any longer, but what I'm discovering is that if I do just 4 or 5 hours of fasting, then I go into ketosis and I'm burning an ample amount of ketones. But I've noticed just in the past 2 weeks that my waist is down from 40 and a half inches down to about 39 and a half inches. So in 2 weeks, I lost about a good half inch of weight.
Well, I'm seeing some interesting things happen with myself. No, all kidding aside, some people who had already been through what I just did, I started out thinking, well, you know, I'm going to diet. I'm going to try to lose weight. And I was told, you know, don't do that. Build every amount of strength that your body has. Eat what you want. And medical professionals told me that, as well as people operating on, lived experience. And never having had major surgery before, it blew my mind to find out just how much energy and strength surgery takes out of your body. Now, I didn't have transfusions. I didn't have anything major. I mean, it was major surgery, but every ounce of energy I have has gone into healing because there's a lot of healing to take place. And one of the weirder things is that, and I don't mean weird, I've been continually advised, eat whatever you want, because right now I had no idea it took so much energy for the body to heal. I know that may sound like a simple statement, but I didn't. And so I'm eating pretty good. I'm maintaining good nutrition, a lot of protein, and I'm not beating myself up if I eat some sugars or if I eat some starches or carbs, because every last bit of it is burning up. I mean, there is a metabolic inferno taking place in my body. And it's why I'm as strong as I am. Apparently, I was stronger than I thought going into the surgery, because I kind of bounced out. For as sore and stiff and tired as I am, a lot of people have come out of it a lot weaker. In my case,
and your immune system is affected, so you have to get strong before you do any lifestyle changes, like as per diet. I prepped myself for keto for 3 weeks. I looked up the literature, and they were talking about taking turmeric, ashwagandha root for your adrenals, all types of supplements to set your body up so it can burn that fat. So you have to be strong in order to lose weight. So doing anything differently right now, of course, you have to heal. You have to relax and heal and take one day at a time. But it sounds like you sound good, though.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, because I feel like the other thing that affects how I sound right now is I'm in an apartment. I got neighbors on either side of me, so I can't really rant and rave like I do when I'm back at home in the studio there. The other thing, I mean, I'm pounding water, and I have no desires for, you know, whether it be cannabis or booze or any. I have no desire for any of that whatsoever. And some of that may be related to the dysphoria being muted. It turns out that I may have been engaging, and this is just the sort of self-reflection you engage in when you have the time to do it. I may have spent a lifetime self-medicating my gender dysphoria just to still, mm-hmm. just to still the voices. And I don't mean like, you know, Son of Sam, you know, voices, but the constant the spiritual and intellectual dissonance that took place inside me, because it has largely gone quiet. It's not entirely quiet, because it's frustrating waiting for the healing to be achieved, but it's decidedly more quiet, and there are no cravings. Closest thing I get to a craving is going into the kitchen and opening the refrigerator and pulling out my container of Bluebell ice cream, and gifting myself a couple of spoonfuls of that, because they're out of Texas, but they're well known throughout the South. I can't get it in West Virginia, and it's really commercial. It's not an all natural product or anything. God knows it's got high fructose corn syrup in it, but my God, I have a new appreciation for vanilla. I mean, if you know what a vanilla bean is, it's a really good indication of how disconnected we are as a culture, that we have a phrase called somebody will refer to something that is kind of bland or banal, and they'll say, well, you know, that's just plain vanilla. Yeah, there's nothing plain about vanilla at all. It's an orchid, for God's sakes. It takes years to grow. It's extremely difficult to bring about and to harvest. And it's one of the most delicate, exquisite flavors on planet Earth. And this particular recipe with Bluebell ice cream, homemade vanilla, is the best I've ever had. Now, no, I've not had Tillamook, and I've not had, you know, something from way up in New England or the far north of the Midwest or anything like that. But this stuff tastes like, your uncle's just churned it on a sunny summer Sunday afternoon outside turning the crank. It is that real. It is so good. Oh, it's so good. And
Have you ever tried the Dutch cheese called Gouda cheese?
Oh God, yeah, I love Gouda.
It's really a great cheese. I was watching a YouTube video on, and they were talking about this is one of the cheeses you could use if you're trying to do keto. And I got addicted to it. But it's expensive. It's like
it depends on what kind you get. But yeah, the better quality, the more you pay. But the one thing I haven't done with this Bluebell homemade vanilla yet, and I want to, but it's just so frustrating dealing with Instacart and everything. I want a root beer float with it, because it's going to be exquisite. Oh my God. Heaven on earth.
Oh, you're gonna make me quit keto if you keep talking like that.
Yeah, I'm gonna.
Because I do miss sugars. One thing I love is chocolate, and they recommend eating small amounts of a semi-sweet dark chocolate.
Yeah, like 70% cacao.
But it brings down your LDL. It brings down your LDL cholesterol along with a tablet of niacinamide. And which is what I'm doing. I'm trying to get off all my pharmaceuticals. I still take two for my heart, but I want to quit my statin. I've been reading all this news about statins. It's just a bunch of hype. And Steve of Georgistan was talking about how you can use Metamucil or psyllium instead of a statin, because what it does is it just draws out all the fats out of your intestines. And keeps.
Well, I'm one of those people who is a genetic triglyceride factory. I'm just genetically predisposed from thousands of years in the far frozen north, my ancestors, and so I store fats. So I take a statin, and I don't feel terrible about it. It works. It works in conjunction with another drug I take called phenofibrate to keep my cholesterol in check, and try to keep my triglycerides at a level that doesn't make the blood drain out of my doctor's face when he sees my blood work numbers.
Right.
I'm just kind of.
Yeah, I need to talk to my doctor.
I'm kind of funny.
My doctor.
Well,
I'm down to.
Kind of funny about
I'm down to 10 milligrams of a statin, so.
Yeah. And, you know, there's no negative impact on my liver numbers so far, so I'm kind of happy about it.
I'm good. But so when was your surgery? How long you been in recovery?
Tomorrow will be 2 weeks since surgery.
Oh wow!
And
when do you get released?
Well, I got released from the hospital a week ago yesterday.
Oh okay.
I will be.
So you're.
Let's see. At 6 months, I will be 87% healed, thereabouts.
Oh, wow.
At the six-week mark, hopefully most of the external healing will have taken place, and the swelling will have gone down. The swelling goes down a little bit more every day. And then when the stitches dissolve, it'll be a lot less uncomfortable.
Can you pre-ambulate? Can you walk around? Or are you on a wheelchair? Or
oh, God,
you,
no.
Are you
I'm on a
just
wheelchair.
Sore all
Heavens
over?
To Betsy, no. I can walk most anywhere I want to. I have to be careful about slopes and stairs and things like that, because if I were to take a tumble, shit would probably get torn apart. So I have to be careful in that regard. And again, my energy stores right. are all burned up. So I just I do a lot of rest. Reclining is my best position to be in, because it takes pressure off of my nether regions. And of course, I've got bad discs in my neck that I've had for years and years and years. And the problem I keep running across is, if I take pressure off my pelvic region, it puts pressure on my neck and makes me have neck spasms. And then if I take pressure off my neck, it puts pressure on my pelvic region, and that just hurts. Mm-hmm. But walking around is easy. Standing up is easy. And when I finally do get back home to West Virginia, I am and Tara Devlin said she's got a great one. She'll send me the link to. I'm going to set up a standing desk in the studio, and I'm going to enjoy that, because that means I can walk around and rant and rave, which is one of my favorite ways to rant and rave.
And that's a good way to keep your heart pumping when you're standing, because you're fully energized. But I was going to ask you, do you take any vitamin D3 to help with your bones?
Yeah, I was taking I've been taking a vitamin D supplement. One of the things I found out was that in surgery, I actually went tachycardic, and that was because I have low magnesium, so I've added a calcium and magnesium supplement. And the other thing I found out, which is kind of weird because I run high blood pressure, is that. I maintain low sodium, which kind of explains why I have for years, even absent the drug I was on at one point, I'm not on it anymore, that made me want, it was sodium eliminating, so I was just drinking jars of pickle juice. But that's why I think that's probably why I love pickle juice as much as I do, because my body has a hard time
storing sodium. If you need
sodium,
can I suggest getting the Himalayan salt?
Oh, I love that.
Don't
stuff.
Use sea salt, because sea salt has microscopic amounts of plastic. But if you get the Himalayan salt, it's completely natural and it's farmed in the Himalayas somewhere.
Yeah,
and
I had
it's
a,
not contaminated.
Yeah, I had
but
my first jar of pink Himalayan salt came from a Himalayan salt farm in Paramus, New Jersey.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I mean, that's where it's – I'm very skeptical of the global supply chain. I mean, I heard a if you buy, for instance, pre-ground black pepper, if you're not grinding it in the grinder, the stuff that you just shake out of the little shaker, that's a lot of pencil shavings with some black pepper thrown in for flavor.
Well, anybody can put organic on any jar, and can you verify that it's organic? I mean, how do you know that it's going to help your body? And that's my only consideration, but I'm just saying that I'm so glad I did this. I feel so much better. You know, I don't have this hypoglycemic adrenal fatigue where my blood sugar goes up and then down and up and then down, and you feel like crap by the end of the day. And anxiety is just the worst when you're in that position because you don't know how to suppress the anxiety. Sometimes I just got anxious for no reason. And it all goes back to my diet. You know, as a kid, I could not gain weight. I was totally hypoglycemic. And I got the term, people would call me a wimp because I could not gain weight. And I had all this fear, social fear, because of that, because I couldn't handle people, because I would get these adrenal attacks for any kind of stress. And it all goes back to my diet. There were other problems involved, you know, being the run of the litter of five kids.
Anybody that has anxiety disorder, I can identify with because I dealt with it all my life. Of course, I just cured. Starting a little over a year ago, I cured mine. The vast majority of my anxiety disorder just freaking disappeared with my first dose of female hormones.
Oh, wow.
That's what I needed. The anxiety was all related to my gender dysphoria.
But I wanted to say, getting back to vitamin D3 or vitamin D, there's another vitamin you might want to think about as K2. And take that with D3 because the K2 helps break down calcium in your bloodstream and it moves that calcium to where it's needed in the joints. A lot of people take calcium, but they're not metabolizing it. But the K2 will help metabolize calcium. And I've been taking the K2, and since I've been taking it, I've noticed my blood pressure has gone down about 3-4 more points, along with the vitamin D.
Yeah, mine.
But everybody's different.
My blood pressure went down again. I think a whole lot of my health problems were related to trying to deny my essential authenticity. And it's a hell of a thing when you realize it. It's amazing.
Yeah, that's nice. And it's kind of liberating for you, I imagine, that it's kind of like you're at a point now in your life that
this is a new beginning. Not liberating. Living authentically is the most amazing thing that has ever happened to me. It has come in some ways at a terrible cost, but what I have purchased is my own life. So there's that. Well, Tim, it's great talking to you, my friend. I think I'm gonna close up shop here after these couple of hours. But it's nice. It's always good to hear from you, my dear friend. And I hope you continue on. I just had this
burning desire to talk because of your medical condition and mine, we're both completely different. But I had a gay brother who died of HIV back in 1991, and he died too soon before the cocktail.
Yeah.
And I just wrote a introduction for an unpublished work of his. And so I'll send you a copy when I get a chance. It's coming out in March. It's called Days of the Clouds. It's about his final days on Earth, talking about being gay and being HIV positive. But my brother has been published. He wrote a book. His name is Duncan Smith. He wrote a book called Age of Oil, which is getting a new rerun. And people are rereading his stuff. And so it's been really exciting to see his stuff get recognized as well as my short films that came out last year in May. But anyway, it was fun talking to you.
It was a lot of fun, Tim, and I always enjoy it. And, you know, the one nice thing about keto is no one will ever give you the side eye for looking at them and saying, more bacon.
True. You know, and I do crave gristle in the pan. I'll cook these veggie burgers, and I'll have all this olive oil in the pan, and I put that over these little wasa crackers, and I just munch on that, and that's kind of like my dessert.
One of the places I really wanted to take Annette when we were down at the beach, but it didn't work out. It'll happen again sometime. There's a restaurant down there that serves broiled oysters that they call Frenchy. And it's broiled oysters that are topped with beef marrow and foie gras. Oh, my heavenly days. I've had them. They're the richest, most wonderful things that have ever crossed my taste buds. Heavens to Betsy, they're good.
You know what the best source of omega-3 oil? It's mackerel, not salmon, but mackerel. And I've been buying mackerels, and I've been munching on those. I have a new thing now about fish. I love fish now. But anyway, it's good talking to you. I appreciate you taking my call.
It was a pleasure, Tim. You take care of yourself, you hear?
Okay. You Bye too, now. Robin. Take care.
Our buddy Tim up in the Great Northwest. And, you know, if you're on keto, I think you're allowed lettuce. There's no sugar or salt or fats or anything. If you're on keto and you take some lovely tender spring greens and you take that bacon grease and you pour that blazing hot bacon grease over those greens and you chop in a little green onion and you grind on some salt and you grind on some black pepper, well, you're in heaven. Because that's just wonderful. What's that? Scary Jerry? Oh my God, this is a gay club. That's the subject line. Laughing. So many points to make anyways. As a straight person of color, LGBT squad has always been my jam. 30 years ago, if you wanted to hear house music late at night, gay people would be involved. I remember one night when you had like six either gay or trans people calling in, I mused to myself, this is a gay club, you moron. This was a drop that famous broadcaster and alpha podcaster, Neil Rogers, also a gay media artist. Gays dominate the arts. What kind of man wants to wear makeup, practice lines, and prance around for hours just to entertain? Gay men. At the genesis of South Beach circa 1986, when it was the best place in South Florida to get killed, I remember two intrepid twinks taking pictures and coming to them and cooing to themselves about how Art Deco is so fab and can you imagine? And they did. Gay people and lesbians and people and trans people built South Beach. True. Easily $500 billion gentrification. They put South Florida on the map globally. They painted Collins Avenue in shades of pink, coral, and aqua. Gay people created our clubs and our restaurants and our vibe. Gay people are just superior with hospitality and aesthetic protocols. Paraphrasing from, fuck it, I'm calling in. Maybe we'll save that to another evening, Scary Jerry. But, God, yeah, South Beach is a beautiful, beautiful place. And, I don't know. Maybe someday I'll get to see it. Maybe I'll get to be fabulous down there. I'm going to get home and I'm going to start working out and see if I can build me a waist and a backside. Sadly lacking in both. But it has been a lovely evening. Thank you, Ralphs, for jumping in and taking us down to, let's see, what did that, dear God, the ciphering's going to kill me. Let's see, we were at 861.22. Now we're down to 851. Oh, dear God, I'm going to have to use the calculator for this. See what you did, Asa, damn troublemaker. 361.22 minus. Ralph's has gotten us down to 853.49. 853.49, I got nothing to write with, so somebody's going to have to remember 853.49. Tomorrow it'll be 1153.49, but we've made progress this evening, and I appreciate it so much because I have so many bills to pay to run two households until I can get home. And just in terms of scheduling, there shouldn't be anything in the way of the program except my own healing and my own energy levels for the foreseeable future. But let's see, I'm guessing I probably will not be home to West Virginia until the new year. So, or a little thereafter. It all depends on when I'm strong enough to drive the long, uncomfortable trip as it is now. I couldn't do it, but the long trip up to West Virginia and into the deep teeth of winter. It's going to get cold here this evening. I'm kind of surprised. Low temperature here in Birmingham tonight's about 29 degrees, but it'll get up in the 50s tomorrow. That'll be nice. So again, a program reminder, there will be something in the way of a program Thanksgiving evening after everybody is absolutely whacked on turkey. I'm going to miss that. But I'm gonna cook a big Thanksgiving dinner when I get home. I can stand out in the cold and do it over the smoker, and that'll be wonderful. The dress, it's the dressing I miss. Who am I kidding? And it's not just anybody's dressing. It's the 100-plus-year-old recipe that we've used in our family, and that's what dressing means. And I don't even think we've got an iron skillet here, and I don't think Instacart will bring me one, and I don't have time to season one. But to make the cornbread and with the white bread and the biscuits and all of that, and then the broth and the seasonings and the celery and the onions and then I was talking with our pal Tracy, not Tracy in L.A., a different Tracy, and she was over the weekend. She worked up her her homemade cranberry sauce, and God, it was it sounded just delicious. And I won't give away her little secret, but it's a wonderful little secret for. And I would just this cranberry sauce would just kill, just absolutely kill. And thanks, by the way, for the note from Brendan. Hi, Robin. Good and grateful to hear your voice. I just wanted to add that ice cream is a proof of life, love, and the freedom to be. Isn't it just? It's oh, it just makes me so damn happy. Always has. Thank you, Brendan. Thank you so much. And y'all have a wonderful evening. Thanks to each and every one of you who keep this program on the air. Thank you so much. Thanks to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thanks to our a la carte contributors. Thanks for jumping in on Venmo. Thank you so much. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this long-running conversation. Thank you. Thank you so much to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Oh, God, he kills me. The messages I get that don't necessarily make it to air. Oh, my God. I have to mute the mic sometimes. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Cold River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. This would be a great time to reach out to the person who represents you in the House of Representatives in D.C. and ask them to please co-sponsor H.R. 2073, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, the AIC Act. No kidding. It really, really does mean the world and the future to Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. And please, get your booster. Everybody can get a booster now. Get your booster. Wear your masks. Gloves, if you feel the need. I wear them down here. This place is a COVID crockpot. Part of the reason that I haven't seen the outside world much except to go to the doctor. Maintain your social distance. And for God's sakes, if somebody comes towards you saying, well, I seen a busted window and everybody's going in, I went in too. Avoid that person like the plague. Because they are. Later.